Hello and welcome to The Right Idea, where we discuss the people, policy, and politics that drive Texas. I'm your host, Brian Phillips. I'm the Chief Communications Officer at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. And with me, as always, is our Vice President of Research, Derek Cohen. Derek, let's jump right into hot takes. Mm-hmm. So I saw this week that, they say a gaffe is when a politician tells the truth. And I think that happened this week when President Biden said that he would be willing to, quote, would be, quote, happy to debate Trump anywhere, any place, any time, which of course probably made the collective gasp and collective scream coming from the White House from all of his advisors, because that's obviously something that they don't want him to do. So the question is, do you think Biden actually debates Trump in a live debate?
I mean, it's going to be tough to back out of now. I mean, now that it's out there like that. I thought it was interesting though that it was on the Howard Stern show, which it's apparently still on. Obviously Howard has come a long way from, throwing cold cuts at scantily clad women. I don't know if the president can say the same. But that being said, everyone does those canned interviews. You saw them trotting out Kamala on the Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore,
apparently,
yeah.
Apparently, yeah, she has a show too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, we need to stop doing podcasts and start doing daytime television.
That would be horrifying.
Yeah, that's...
Can we do a View, maybe? Yeah. Like, we could do, like, the View and...
The Counter View?
I like it.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, like Bizarro View. That'd be great. But all that to say is, you know, they're ramping this up in the campaign. And it's only reaffirming the narrative that's already out there about, you know, Biden's, you know, physical and mental ailments. Because even getting revved up for that, it was still a very... flat affect, flat delivery. I don't know if he says he wants to debate Trump, but I just can't see him getting up for that kind of a fight.
I think it would be abusive. I think that they shouldn't do it for just those reasons, because I think Biden would obviously show that he does not have the mental capacity at this point to think on his feet like that. I mean, he hasn't done a press conference, and I can't remember the last time that he ever did one. They won't even let him walk to the helicopter.
The last time he did a press conference was after individuals in Israel got killed, remember? And then he had
6 months ago, yeah.
Yeah, and then he went back. Remember, he was walking off and then went back to the microphone,
right,
to the chagrin about everybody in the room.
He can't even get to his office without, you know, doing some kind of funky thing. But yeah, then now they have, you know, the news stories out. They have like all of these staff that like crowd around him just to like show him to make sure he can get to the helicopter, you know, in a straight line. And so I don't know how he's going to be able to get into a debate and think on his feet. But this will just be another lie from the president something else that he will not do that he said he was going to do. All right, well, let's jump into the regular show. Of course, we have our shameless plug, which I always like to do at the very beginning, and that's for our weekly newsletter. It's called The Post. There's always something really interesting and exclusive that we put out in these newsletters, but it's also a combination of all the different things that we work on here at TPPF, all the various hot takes and things that we're commenting on, as well as always something very Texas-themed and Texas sort of a cultural thing at the end. So we really appreciate those who have already subscribed. We've gotten some really, really good feedback. Got a lot of haters, actually, on our newsletter. I don't know if that's a thing, but like people who love to sign up for our newsletter and then yell at us about what we write about. So we appreciate those too. Yeah, it's coming from inside the building. All right, so let's get here where we're really here, which is of course with our guests. We're excited to have David Dunmore and Zach Whiting, the Honorable Zach Whiting, on our program. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So David Dunmore is the campaign director for our Better Tech for Tomorrow campaign that, you know, deals with all of the technological or tech issues, tech policy issues. Zach, the Honorable Zach Whiting, which I guess makes David dishonorable.
Right.
Zach Whiting is the policy director for BTT and you're honorable because you're a former state representative from Iowa. Is that right?
Former state senator, yes.
I'm sorry. Whoa, just demoted him.
That's very offensive.
Very. As somebody who worked on the Senate side, I deeply realize.
He represents 15 people, not 7.
Yeah. That's right, because in Iowa there's like 900 counties, right?
So in Iowa there's 99 counties, but our districts are much smaller. We do nest two House districts and a Senate district. So my Senate district was 60,000 people, but from a rural part of the state, that's spread out over a pretty big geography.
Well, enough about states that only matter every 4 years. You're now in Texas and doing Texas policy here and working on tech issues. And so I want to jump in. This is great. We've been trying to get you guys on the podcast, but you've just been so busy with all the things that are going on, because this really is a emerging, you know, and certainly the policies are emerging. And a lot of people are kind of scratching their heads trying to figure out, you know, well, what is tech policy going to be? And so before we jump into all these issues like AI and autonomous vehicles and social media and all that kind of stuff, maybe David, just kind of give us the overview of kind of what's the approach that you're taking to figuring out tech policy for Texas?
Yeah, well, again, thanks for having us. I know, you know, we started this initiative about two and a half years ago, and when Kevin Roberts was at the helm, one of the last things he said before he left is that tech policy will be a defining issue for the conservative movement. And in 2022, leading up to the 88th legislature, that was particularly true because there weren't really any true North conservative groups from a state perspective that were working on tech policy. So you ask, what is that conservative approach? Well, really, we focus on, to your point, all the many emerging technological issues from data privacy, the idea that we're now the product for social media companies, for big business online, kids' safety. There's been just this massive watershed moment where parents are waking up and realizing they don't have control over their kids and their ability to keep them safe online. And so that, as well as broadband in Texas post-pandemic, we saw there's a digital divide and we need to ensure that folks have the ability to connect to the digital economy. So that was 2023 leading up into that were some of the big issues that Zach and I really, we kept saying, flying by the seam of our pants, building the plane as we flew it. We learned, we got to know a lot of the folks, the big players in the Capitol community, different groups that work in this space. And as we're doing the research, really defined and planted our flag on the issues of consumer protection, human dignity, human agency, and ultimately looking for ways to ensure that Texas is leading the country in innovation and development. And you can certainly do that. And we've proven, I think, that you can do that by having a light touch regulatory approach to ensure that we're maximizing the good, because tech is a tool that can benefit all of society, all of Texas, but then minimizing some of the harms. So from that to where we're at now, you hit it. I mean, there's AI, there's autonomous vehicles, there's crypto. There's so many issues that are constantly happening. And so now in the interim, this is where Zach and I are spending a lot of time, him leading the research agenda, which we can talk about. And then myself spending a lot of time in the Capitol, getting to know what the interim charges are, what the Senate, what the House is prioritizing, because the last thing I'll say is it's really Texas is positioning itself as a state that's going to lead in these reforms. The federal government, on every single issue, they don't act, but it's particularly the case on tech policy. So there's a lot of excitement and there's a lot of also confusion on what can and can't be done in this policy space. So that's what Zach and I are here for.
Zach, why don't you take us through kind of the contours of the debate? I mean, one of the things we always say on the show is, you know, the old Thomas Sowell quip that there are no solutions, there are only trade-offs. Mm-hmm. And certainly in this space, I think you can have kind of a left-right debate as well. But even on the right, there's that sort of like, let the free market work. Let's figure out what is good and what is bad for people and let them decide versus putting guide rails and putting, you know, protections in, particularly when we talk about kids and online. So can you just maybe give us an overview of kind of the debate, like where the trade-offs happen On policy?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. There is this sort of very interesting convergence, almost strange bedfellows on the political right and left about how to address the issues of what in the we call emerging technologies. And I think that to that very point that you just raised, that notion of, you know, free market magic and it will all take care of itself has worked for a long time. But what we have seen in recent years, particularly the emergence of the digital economy, is, let's say, more control by a fewer number of actors, which mm-hmm. in this case are large multinational corporations. And I don't want to pick on any names or call out any names, but we have gone from a model of you go in and you have 10 cars to choose from to now you have, you know, two or three cell phone companies, you have two major cell phone providers that have a very tight universe over how their products can be used. And we've shifted to this model where it's not just corporation and consumer, it's the individual using the product is sort of the product itself. Mm-hmm. And we see the monetization prioritization of individuals' data, their privacy, their dignity, and their autonomy. And that's where I think this shift that we're seeing, I think, is important, that we have a broader cultural conversation about, to take Derek back to his PhD teaching days, the sort of theoretical frameworks that you apply is, do we take a technological determinism approach? Do we allow technology itself to shape society? Or should we have this sort of social constructivist approach? Should we have society sort of dictating the direction of technological development? And interestingly, in recent years, you see a great pushback against what someone at the AI Select, AI House Select Committee hearing called the, we should not fetishize innovation, if I got that phrase right. And it's not, we shouldn't just do innovation for innovation's sake, but that we should have responsibility in the inputs and the innovation by companies, and that we should have responsible guardrails on the back end for how those technologies impact particular, you know, individuals and communities. And I think that's a great conversation that we're having. It has not happened really up until this point. And I think it's good for the discourse, and most importantly, good for individuals and people of Texas.
Derek, just to finish the setting the stage here, because, I mean, not only is the technology brand new and how it's being used, you know, it's evolving and changing every day. I mean, I think ChatGPT, just from the time that it first came out, has completely evolved and gotten even crazier. But with all of that changing and all that going, I mean, what kind of, you know, what are these guys jumping into from a legislative standpoint? Like, how do you, I mean, is there infrastructure up there at the Capitol that's ready to handle these big issues? I mean, is there even any water in the pool that they're jumping into?
I hope this will be taken in the spirit of charity, which it's intended, but what they're jumping into is a lot of ignorance. And that's not because, you know, that is not a slight against the members up there, but these issues have never been presented to them before. And not only that, but if you look at who they're actually talking to about it, to Zach and David's point, they usually tend to be, in one way or another, interested parties. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we're a 501c3 research organization, so our Herculean and sometimes Sisyphean task is to educate, right? And I think that no more is that the case that needs to be done here. And when I say educate, I don't mean, well, do we want to use ChatGPT 3.5 or do we want to go to 4.0? Because there's, you know, these are the differences. I mean, literally, like, what is ChatGPT?
Mm-hmm. And I still have an iPhone 4. What are we talking about?
Exactly. I appreciated Zach's comment about the, two cell phone manufacturers. I go, yeah, we divide society in ways, you know, the blue speech bubble people and the green speech bubble people. Yeah. But on that note, I want to ask, because I think that this all on the stage setting really surrounds, I think, a misunderstanding of the conservative position on technology, that which you're pushing back on. And this is usually the one that's foisted by, we'll say, other groups that are also interested parties. Mm-hmm. And in that, they basically say, to steelman their argument, that what y'all are trying to do is basically just a modern form of Ludditism. You know, mm-hmm. you want to smash the cotton gins. You want to, mm-hmm. Basically get the horses back in the barn, as it were. But what I think that misses is, like, again, not that you have solved the Hayekian knowledge problem and therefore can, you know, you have the you're the right people that it takes to regulate that. But what it misses is the fact that this is a, you know, basically this battlefield of ideas, this battlefield of policy, that there's only one side showing up to, and everyone else is conscripting on that side. Mm-hmm. And again, not to put words in your mouth, but that's why you see, I remember during some of the, the parental access discussion, there was actual talking points out there that by giving parents a right to regulate what their child experiences, that somehow is disempowering parents. How do y'all deal with that particular asymmetry of information in terms of the advocacy space?
Yeah. Well, I can start and then kick to you on the research side.
Please.
So that when we look at this, right, Zach hit on the multinational corporation, vested interests, et cetera. It really is tens of
trillions.
And
we're not anti-multinational corporation by any means.
But to frame it, it's tens of trillions of dollars with collective companies that are pointing their lobbyists, the barrel of the gun, at the Texas legislature with members who don't always know what's happening because they're following more issues than you can possibly imagine. who tend to dilute the discussion with convoluted talking points, things that aren't in fact the case, but they'll highlight one section of a bill, for example, on House Bill 18, which was the big Securing Children Online Through Parental Empowerment Act. And the lobbyists did a phenomenal and adept job at fomenting confusion and coming and testifying and saying, well, you see this here, this could put online education modalities out of business, or, you know, for parents who don't have the ability to be at home and tutor their kids, well, if there's a screen and the kid is going to be learning on it, well, maybe they can't now. And the point is, oftentimes, it wasn't just making a mountain out of a molehill, it was patent disinformation.
And manufacturing a mountain.
That is correct, yes.
So in order for my kid to be able to do their homework, I'm sorry, we're just going to have to let them have access to all this pornography?
Basically, yes.
Nothing we can do about that?
Yeah, yes. And, well, into that point, that was
basically is what the school libraries are saying. So.
That's true. Thank you, Representative Patterson.
Let's get our K-12 people here later.
Well, into that point, that's on kind of the kid safety stuff, but then with protecting children from pornographic content, you actually had lobbyists come in saying, well, we understand the concern about kids as young as 11 being the average age for seeing porn online, but we're worried about the business side of the companies I represent and what's going to happen. And mind you, when Pornhub left the state of Utah and their lobbyists said, well, we lost 52% of our viewership because kids aren't watching porn, they promulgated those same talking points in the Texas legislature.
Your terms are acceptable.
Your terms are absolutely acceptable, which, you know, for folks who haven't followed, Pornhub has left the state of Texas, to which we spiked the football, because that was never the goal from an intent policy perspective. But if that's the terms they want to set for us, then so be it. But the point is, very skilled and adept lobbyists who come in to try and confuse the debate. And that's where, you know, to Derek's credit, leading our research, and Brian on comms, and Zach and I on our team, we've really built a powerhouse of more so getting our foot in the door before the lobbyists do. And so that's where I spend the vast majority of my time, is talking to folks on AI now and some of the other issues. And so we can take the interim to educate them. And then Zach, ultimately, when he testified in House Bill 18, I'll never forget, you know, he had, we prepped for it. We had all the materials ready to go. And as folks were testifying and certain members were just totally confused because of what lobbyists said or did, Zach had to scratch his testimony and say, I'm going to answer your questions and I'm going to provide common sense information on what this bill actually does. And so that's where I think the BTT, Better Tech for Tomorrow, sweet spot really is.
I do think we need to clarify for our audience that when you were testifying on children's online safety, you were not wearing that mustache.
No, I'm not. Usually I shave it off before I start to testify, but we're gonna let it rock for a couple weeks, much to my wife's chagrin.
We're 5 months past move member.
So yes, I know.
I will say, and we are not above, we love competition and we're not above shameless promotion. And so I did want to mention that you guys are starting a new podcast, which is fantastic. We love that. It's called Rebel Tech Podcast. You've done your episode zero, which is being promoted right now. It's talking about, you know, behind the scenes on what you guys are looking to achieve there. We haven't posted any episodes yet, but we're going to be recording pretty soon. And you guys are going to be putting out what's going to be, you know, I want you to talk a little bit about that, because I think you have different, you know, not just going to be talking about, you know, issues of the day or, you know, here's why AI is good or AI is bad. What are you guys going to be actually looking to do?
Specifically address the slander that you put out there that alleged that Brian and I are AI generated.
Yeah, so tune in for that episode. My one canned joke in that episode was, there's only one real podcast at TPPF, and that is Sweet Tea. And then every other podcast is just deep fake or AI face swapping.
I can't believe you're just pulling the curtain back like that, huh?
Yes, more shameless promotion. But it is, you know, you call it Rebel Tech, and of course we have sort of that culture here down in Texas of being rebels, come and take it, you know, all that kind of stuff. So what are you hoping to achieve? What are people going to learn with the podcast?
Yeah, I think it goes to that broader point that we've sort of this thread that we've made throughout, is that we need to establish a movement conservative perspective on technology issues. And there's far too many podcasts out there that, you
Full
know,
stop.
Yes, there are far too many podcasts out there, but not ours. Please watch all the TPPF products. But there are so many tech podcasts out there that are just, you know, hey, here's, you know, what industry is doing. Here's this, you know, new innovative technology and why it's great, or that sort of free market magic libertarian perspective. And the goal of this podcast is to put a different voice into the conversation. And so the first episode, or excuse me, episode zero, is just just laying the land of what we're going to do and what we're about. We'll go in the first few episodes and talk through what we call at the foundation our LAAs, and those are the primary policy objectives that we'll tackle in the upcoming session. But then more importantly, we want to open it up to lawmakers, to experts, even to staff that work on these issues, and try to understand from a policy perspective what they're seeing, what they're hearing from their constituents, and how, as a matter of research and policy, we can be responsive to that.
So let's jump into the policy. And I mean, each one of these issues, we could spend an entire podcast. In fact, you're probably going to spend an entire podcast on every single one of these things. But let's jump in just maybe to 30,000 foot level. Like, I mean, take one of these, you know, whether it's AI regulation, or I don't even know if regulation is the right word, David, or autonomous vehicles is another big issue. We've already mentioned social media and protecting kids online. You know, we even talked about, you know, there's been new polling out about banning cell phones in schools. That's maybe not necessarily exactly related to what you're doing, but it's sort of on that road. What are the big issues in terms of the specific policy proposals that you guys might be addressing maybe in the next legislature?
Yeah, I'll kick off with the interim approach. So the Senate released their interim charges. I think y'all discussed that in one of your recent episodes. Mm-hmm. And it was really encouraging for us to see in Senate BNC, Business and Commerce, AI as a broad subject is going to be a huge focal point in the Transportation Committee, self-driving vehicles. And our research touches on, look, we want Texas to lead and innovate, but we saw what happened with GM when they were here operating the city and not having good partnerships and with not just the citizens and residents, but law enforcement. So, okay, what can we do there? Then there's kid safety, there's deepfakes targeting young girls in particular, social media and its effects on minors, as well as election integrity. So really, all of our tech issues are going to be focused on the Senate and then House side. Zach mentioned the select committee that's been assembled in the House with Chair Giovanni Capriglione, just looking at how is AI being used, what are potential reforms we can look at. So in the interim, a lot of it is the education and awareness, and letting folks know what we're going to do, which is on AI, for a quick example, then I'll kick to Zach. There's going to be probably a lot of bills, more sector-specific approaches to AI, because what good common sense governance and criminal justice is might be different than healthcare and transportation and so on. Mm-hmm. So my job is really to educate and create awareness surrounding here are the potential harmful use cases and application in healthcare, and here's what we should look at when approaching responsible reforms. And you know, I'm not going to go down each and every one of these, but we data privacy and kids safety were huge priorities for us last session. So it's a continuation of that leading to the next session. But Zach, on AI, I know that's your knee deep in that research. If you want to hit on that really quick.
Yeah, I think David covered it well. And just the last.
Thanks for helping me host, David.
Oh, yes. You're welcome. Yeah.
You should get a podcast.
We're a team too. You know, you guys are a team. We're a team.
And just as a continuation of that point, the other piece of interim engagement is the AI advisory council. Yeah. And that was pursuant to a bill passed and signed into law last session. Senator Tan Parker and Representative Giovanni Capriglione are the co-chairs of that. And then the governor appointed four experts on AI, technologists, ethicists, constitutional lawyer, and criminal justice experts. And their particular task is studying how AI and automated technologies are used in state government. And even from that first meeting that they had, which was actually right before our Texas Policy Summit panel, we were actually looking very closely at our watches in the 2 or 3 minutes everyone sort of floods in. It was amazing just from the first hearing that they had 7 or 8 ideas of how it can be used effectively in state government. An example that just really stood out to me is processing certain paperwork and invoices that once took 2 to 3 weeks could be brought down to anywhere between 15 and 20 seconds. So that's an amazing way to increase efficiency, save money, and then maybe move those sort of forward-facing human functions to other areas. And that's very promising. Or maybe you realize you have a surplus of employees and you can you know, save some money there. So that's what we're focusing on the interim. And then as we go forward in our research and advocacy on the AI space, we'll be looking at how it is used and what are the responsible use cases in those various sectors that David outlined.
Can I ask a follow-up on that? So I don't know if y'all remember, but there was a Saturday Night Live commercial from, it had to be decades ago, with Sam Waterston, in which he is selling insurance to the elderly to keep robots from breaking into your house and stealing your medicine, because that's what fuels them, as the commercial alleges. I have a feel like the reason that that's funny is because you're like, haha, these people don't understand like robots and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that's applicable here, specifically in the field of AI. So I know David mentioned a lot of sector specific regulations, but what more broadly does an AI regulatory environment look like? Is it saying like no AI here, don't do that? Or is it something more along the contours of, you know, there it needs to be, you know, it needs to have these particular procedural safeguards? What does that look like, gentlemen?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sort of animating principles that we discuss in our podcast and frankly, as we go through our research, our messaging and everything is privacy, human agency, human dignity, autonomy, choice, all of those things, and focusing on it from a, you know, sort of a consumer human-centric angle. And even industry, I mean, every meeting, every, you know, press release, every product that they release is, we need to focus on responsible development of these technologies. And so it's this combination of, let's say, you know, industry best standards, but as a matter of public policy, there is a role for government in this. And that's where we, I think, diverge from a lot of our friends, is that say, no government ever, let the free market figure it out. This is too consequential, and I don't want to be too, you know, dire, but existential of a question. And so getting things right, I think, on the front end and establishing those light touch guardrails that are animated by those principles, I think that's a better environment for innovation to happen within, is that, you know, these are the guardrails. This is the sandbox in which you can operate. Know that on the front end and tweak that as you go, rather than just allowing, you know, unfettered innovation, like, you know, and promulgation, as we've seen, like, let's see, in the ubiquity of social media, and then come out and cut their legs out from under them. That's not good. That's not good for industry. It's not good for consumers. And so I think this forward-thinking approach that we're advocating for and that lawmakers are taking, and frankly, that industry is even asking for, I think that's a good direction.
So I obviously think you're making a good pitch, but there's probably, you know, let's say, I'll just throw this question out for everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say you're a tech bro. And I know you are, Derek. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this right now, I mean, are they horrified that, you know, that here comes big regulation, or it's coming in, or this is going to stifle?
I am horrified. Yes,
you would be. Well, I mean, we're also small government guys, right? Like, I mean, this as an organization, you know, we're all for small government. But if you're a tech bro listening to this and you're thinking about, like, well, you know, I go out every day and I try to make the world a better place, and I come up with new technologies that do all these amazing things, and now here comes Texas, and of course Texas is going to be leader on figuring out these guardrails or whatever they are, how terrified should they be that you know, there's going to be a heavy hand, or there's going to be more of a hatchet approach than a scalpel?
Well, I think that's you needn't look further than I believe it was Google that had the model move fast and break things.
Oh, but, it was Facebook.
Facebook.
It's all of them.
Yeah. But I think that, and the reason I'm not saying that pejoratively, because I think that captures kind of the the milieu of that tech space, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's very, in some ways I'll qualify, but that has served the development of the tech sector quite well thus far. The problem is, though, again, when things become this, reach this level of ubiquity, you know, there needs to be some common sense standards that, again, people are going to pick fault with, oh, who says you got the common sense, all that. Mm-hmm. The point is, Zach, and I think your pitch was really, really good, is that you are establishing a smooth, pothole-free road with guardrails on the side. Very wide. You know, this will be I-10 going into Houston. Very wide.
Like a big wall with a big door.
Whatever. Yeah, big, beautiful door. Yeah,
beautiful
yeah.
door with a
many people, many tech bros are saying. But I think that the... It's much like the businesses that moved to Texas, including these technology companies, is because the regulatory framework, you know, we don't advocate for, you know, no, right. You know, we're not out here saying, you know, the arch libertarian position that, you know, we don't need to license doctors or anything like that. But it's, you know, we want everybody to have a very even surface playing field with guardrails. And again, 10 lanes wide, that they can innovate within. And I think that is actually I think the ones that are, understand things from an institutional perspective, like and appreciate that. And I think the ones that don't, the more as a kind of, you know, petulant, and we all know examples in the tech space that check that box, are probably the ones that are scared stuffless.
David, do tech bros have a point?
Yeah. So I guess I'll go anecdotally on this for a second here. I think a lot of the focus...
We like stories. Yeah, you can just tell a story. Story time with David.
Okay, story time
This is
David.
What you're going to get on the new Rebel Tech podcast.
Tech Bros with David Dunmoyer. and I am obviously not dressed like a tech bro, but spent a lot of time talking to people.
Do you even
community.
Own a vest?
I do own a vest.
Okay, just
make actually sure. own the initial prototype TBPF vest. Yeah. So
now I'm jealous.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Breaking news.
Huge if true. You know, you see a lot of focus on the Sam Altman versus Elon Musk versus any of the big, you know, tech CEOs.
Larry Page.
Yeah, Larry Page. And that's important because it's, you know, setting the tone from the top. What is a board saying is going to influence what the company does. But one thing that I think got missed after Elon Musk came into Twitter and turned it into X and he slashed 80% of the workforce is that for the folks who came and they worked their butts off in undergrad studying software engineering, coding, and they had this grand vision and dream of being a part of building something great. And that's still a core in this country, whether or not, you know, the woke left and what's happening there with the mind virus. For the folks who remained at Twitter, they felt a resurgence of hope because for the first time, you're pruning these organizations that have, you know, we see the videos of all the free wine bars and the nap pods and all these ridiculous perks. But there are folks at these companies who genuinely want to build something great. And with that,
nap
I
pods?
Think, what's that?
What's a nap pod?
Oh, the nap pods are like these little hanging orb-like things where you can pop in, pull the cover.
Like you take a nap.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you said
sleep
nap
during the workday.
Oh, yeah. Why can't they just sleep under their desk like the rest of us?
I know. It's the nonprofit life. They should get used to it.
I know.
But, you know, again, for the tech bros who genuinely care about these companies and innovation and development, they want, to Zach's point, they want to have clear guardrails. They want to know what are the rules of engagement. And there's a lot of concern. You're seeing the engineers who worked on Gemini at Google, they were horrified that they couldn't even, the image generating AI couldn't depict founding fathers as they actually are, Native American, Black, whatever it was depicting. And for them, it is disgraceful to the amount of effort they put into developing these technologies. And so to have those guardrails in the front end that can guide and animate what is innovation going to look like, what is that sandbox we can play in, it provides clarity, which a lot of these companies and a lot of these tech bros don't have. So it's not all the tech bros, but I think that was missed in what happened with Twitter, is there was hope.
Yeah.
And particularly, like, I mean, just use AI as example is it's, I mean, here's what AI is. Data input, go through the algorithm, data output. And so the sort of approach or angle or values that you put into the development of that is going to determine, and the data that you select on the front end is going to impact what comes out on the output. And so we have this sort of, you know, traditional Silicon Valley model of how technology has been developed, and frankly, I mean, not to be political, but just to be political, is that it is a predominantly left-wing you know, vision and values that have gone into this technological development. Interestingly, and David, you know this, you know, better than I do with some of the folks you've talked to in relationships, but there are good values-driven, conservative, faith-driven people that work in technology, even for some of these, you know, some of these big companies. And so we always talk sort of this U.S.-China battle, but in a good way, Texas is, for all of the reasons that you outlined, for its business environment, for a tax environment, for its literal, you know, environment, climate, the resources that it has, its workforce, is really in a great position. And we've seen a lot of companies move to Texas. And so as long as we, you know, come to Texas, and these companies adopt Texas values rather than California values, I think that's a positive direction for technology development. And then we have a lot of entrepreneur friends that are trying to identify folks with those values to work at their companies and to drive the technology forward.
You going to name drop any of those here? Or do you got to throw out some? No,
sure.
I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, we can say Peter Rex, right? Like the parallel economy is happening in tech. And I think that is a great point because Texas will be the beacon of hope, opportunity, innovation. And if it's Larry Page and Google who says humanity is a threat to innovation and we will bring it to extinction if that means permissionless innovation, you know, pads our pockets, folks like Peter Rex who move to Texas and say faith, family, freedom will transcend companies like Google because we are building, we are planting the seed for the tree whose shade will never reap. It's a legacy building idea. And maybe, that is what Texas will beat California on. I have full confidence in that.
And wait, maybe we'll see Peter Rex on the new podcast.
That's right.
Rebel Tech.
Open invitation, Pete.
So that's one. That's from one direction. That's what people are worried about, a sort of government heavy-handed, stopping innovation. The other one, which I think is actually more legitimate and is perhaps even more pernicious, is government overtaking these technologies and using them for ill purposes. Yeah. I mean, you have the one example, which is a little different, which is essentially the government going into like Facebook and Twitter and like forcing censorship or forcing, you know, only one side getting out. There's a lot of that, you know, deplatforming and otherwise.
Jawboning.
They didn't kill the technology. They actually manipulated it or used the heavy hand of government to use it for their purposes. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the other things, and you guys have a great article that published about a month ago, a few weeks ago, talking about autonomous vehicles and how that might happen, where you might wake up one day and because, you know, you've used your car too much. I mean, if you have an autonomous vehicle and it's controlled by the internet or whatever, you have too big of a carbon footprint. You put in, you know, your coordinates to go to Big Bend National Park, and it says, well, you can't go out there because you can't drive that much for the rest of the month. You got to wait until, you know, the first of the month before you can do that. Or, you know, it has access to your health data. And I think this is kind of a little on the conspiracy side, but let's just say you punch it in to go to Dunkin' Donuts or McDonald's, and it says, no, sorry, you need to go to Whole Foods and get yourself a salad. Now, you know, that's some Black Mirror type stuff. But I mean, the point is that we are depending on technology. Could the government get in there and then manipulate this, not stifle it necessarily, but then utilize it for ill, you know, big government purposes to try and you know, whether it ends up in social scores or all these other things. I mean, you could really see that happening. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think it is happening.
It's already happening.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's interesting. It's almost this full circle moment. You know, I was in eighth grade when 9/11 happened, very formative time in my life. And you see the response and how government used technology and laws and then maybe abused the scope of those laws, you know, FISA and the FISC courts and stuff like that, which unfortunately the Congress just extended for 2 years without any substantial guardrails. And so you saw how the government was using technology at the threat of civil liberties towards individuals. And then you see this sort of cultural shift where we say, well, we need to, you know, sort of emphasize the sort of civil liberties of people. And you see the pendulum swing away from that. But then you see, well, you know, maybe corporations are doing, you know, a very similar thing. Then you see, as to your point, the government sort of co-opting the corporations. And now we see it sort of coming back full circle with, you know, maybe how the government develops and uses things like artificial intelligence, facial recognition and stuff like that on the battlefield. And so, yeah, that is a huge full circle moment. And, you know, for as much as we do talk about, you know, as we've spent this whole episode talking about responsible development, in the tech community, that's always something that we have to keep guardrails around when civil liberties, civil rights, and constitutional rights are at risk. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely something that lawmakers need to keep at the fore of their minds. But the
ironic thing is, David, you're asking the government to handcuff itself in that respect. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. we're talking about policy here and what the legislature is going to do. I think that the Texas legislature is fairly responsible and could go forward on something like that. But it's hard to do. It's hard for the government to say, we will not use this, right. Especially when you're making, you know, you made a point about national security or for defense or something like that. You start using these like, oh, well, government needs this mm-hmm. because of the national defense mm-hmm. or because of national security. You start, those arguments start to wear down.
Yeah, national security is the buzzword, right? During the pandemic, the city of Washington, D.C., they purchased a huge sum of personal information on the residents, geolocation information, health information from a data broker. And for those not familiar, data brokers are the third-party shadowy figures that scrape all your personal information online and they sell it to the highest bidder. In this case, they wanted a contract with City of Washington, D.C. Now, D.C., of course, uses this during the pandemic to map out where folks are walking. So if they were going to institute vaccine passport checkpoints, they knew exactly where to put them, where the high traffic zones were. And so when you look at, you know, this is Washington, D.C., this is the swamp, the core of it all, and put my Alex Jones hat on for a second, the American Data Privacy Protection Act and other similar national bills on data privacy, overwhelmingly bipartisan in support. And all the folks that would be came to Washington and said, hey, we want this. We want, you know, Americans to have more control over their personal information. And nothing has happened. nothing has happened at the national level. So on the one hand, you're exactly right, Brian. There's this moment in America, we talked about it on our episode zero, it's a cultural and political moment where folks are fed up with Washington, they're fed up with what's happening with dystopian tech. And this is where Texas, we stand in the breach and we passed great data privacy bills last session. Washington is now taking the model in Texas and trying to work it through with a new bill. We'll see what happens there. We're cautiously optimistic. Is that even, are we jaded?
We're jaded. Don't fire me, but it's a good bill.
It's a good bill. But yeah, Brian, you're right. This is where, you know, our lawyers call it the cat's paw, where when folks like Sam Bankman-Fried come to Washington, D.C. and say, hey, regulate me. I want to be a good faith actor. I want to work with you. And then what happens 3 months later? Well, FTX goes completely belly up because the entire time they were working nefarious process for their own pecuniary gain. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I could go down the list. There's 35,000 examples of tech trying to infiltrate and vice versa, Washington trying to work in cahoots with big tech.
Well, this has been super interesting. I have one more question. Derek, did you have any other questions for these guys before we jump into our rapid fire segments?
No, I do not.
Well, the one thing I feel like we need to at least address, because it's just been in the news a lot, is of course the ban on TikTok. Have you guys looked into any of that? I don't even know if that's sort of something that you've been interested in looking at, but and where that necessarily has to, I mean, it's obviously tech policy in terms of like what China could be doing, you know, scraping all that information from our 16-year-olds doing silly dances, mm-hmm. And how that can be used. You know, just to play a little devil's advocate, because we're kind of at the end of the segment, like what do you, I mean, why is that a national security threat? What is the issue that if China's scraping all this information about people, you know, doing chef videos and funny dances and you know, whatever's happening on TikTok. Clearly, I'm not on TikTok because I'm not articulating it.
You're worried about the robots coming to get your medicine?
I absolutely am. I get my daily reminder from the Heritage Foundation to delete TikTok, so I've never subscribed. But I mean, well, could you articulate like the real, like what is the legitimate concern there?
Sure. China fought an opium war once. This is their second opium war. They have a product in China that they're serving under ByteDance to Chinese people. And it focuses on education and awareness for kids, learning about different animals and creating this environment of excitement around studying and learning. And that's the TikTok product they have in China. What they're shipping to United States of America to kids, to 9-year-old Alani Walton in North Texas, who was fed the blackout challenge on TikTok that results in her committing suicide. They know what they are doing from a cultural upheaval standpoint. And then there's a whole data collection side, which is China is absolutely using this as a vehicle and a conduit for sucking all of our personal information overseas. And when we look at cybersecurity, we look at the national landscape and what's evolving there, we may not fully see the consequences of it this moment, mm-hmm. but don't rest assured, but know confidently that China is harboring this and holding on to this for when they want to use it. And this is where you bring Chuck DeVore on to go for 2.5 hours and what China could do. But, you know, we
on the next Rebel Tech podcast,
so many great plugs.
But no, AI, though.
We did engage on that slightly from a messaging perspective. And really what we said is, look, the CCP ByteDance came before Congress and said, we're not taking personal information of Americans. We want to set up the United States of America. So we'll be just like Sam Bankman-Fried. We'll be good faith actors to work with you. And then when Congress says, cool, put your money where your mouth is, let's pass a bill to do just that. Now ByteDance sends, you know, how many, 130 million of their users in America at the throats of members of Congress.
Mm-hmm. And that backfired. And just 2 points I'll plug in, not to interrupt, but it's, you know, it's so often called a TikTok ban. It's a divestment bill. It's saying, you know, these are companies that are owned by hostile foreign actors. And it's to David's point, put your money where your mouth is. You say you're not going to store this data and use it for nefarious purposes. They say, well, we'll geofence it and keep it in the United States. They're not doing that. Mm-hmm. They are not good faith actors. They're dishonest. It's not only the harmful product that they're serving up, but it's to that very point. It's the legitimate national concern. National security concerns of how Americans' data is being used, how their eyeballs are being used by a hostile foreign actor. So there's that piece. And then from a GR standpoint, I mean, I don't know who they hired to be their lobbyist, but no one should ever hire them again. This campaign to have, you know, millions of, their followers, kids that were as young as, you know, they were preteens, let's say, calling in and saying, you know, I, you know, don't do this and don't do that and everything. And they're like, wait, who am I talking to? What's a congressman? And that's, I think one speaks
to kill themselves too.
And threatening to kill themselves. And so that is where the state of civil education. It's an interesting moment that we've gotten to this place, and that it's shifted to that degree. We talk about those things in the guise of national security with a little bit of pause and concern. This is one of those areas where it might be valid to have them divest from this hostile
actors. That's weird. I thought these idiot kids liked divestment.
Yeah.
In typical fashion, we usually end the interviews on doom and gloom. So this is a great opportunity. But that's why we have the rapid fire segments at the end of the show, so we can always try and end up on a high note. We hope you'll stick around while Derek and I talk about this. And you guys are welcome to jump in if you want to, because we're not going to cut. So you're just going to have to be stuck sitting there listening to us.
Anyway, you'll have to slink off under the cameras. And okay,
just weird looking. That would be strange. And I'm not sure that Jefferson could edit that out. All right. So let's jump in. First rapid fire segment. Survey says polling data in the news. A new poll came out from the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation on gambling in Texas. That's over the last, I guess it's always kind of been there, you know, kind of around the edges in the legislature. But it feels like it's kind of moving and finally at this point. And there's certainly been a lot of efforts from the pro gambling folks in the last couple of sessions to try and get it. Well, now it's according to this poll, they polled 1,600 likely voters. I know our folks are sophisticated enough to know what that means. And according to these results, it shows that there is support. There's 56% of Texans now support casino resorts in Texas, whereas only 30% say no. 56 support for casino resorts. Does that surprise you? That surprises me a lot.
Yeah, it does. And not so much the fact that it's, you know, 56-30, because, I mean, you know, if you say casino resort, you and I had this discussion on Microsoft Teams. Again, you want to talk about tech that needs to be regulated. That's a whole other thing. But we're on Microsoft Teams. We're having this discussion that you said, oh, well, when you frame it not as casinos, but casino resorts,
right?
You know, it goes from being Binion's Gold Nugget to being like the Aria.
It's like high end fashion. It's like fine dining. All of that is what they're really selling.
Yeah, nobody thinks it's going to be the Flamingo. But but that being said, though, I don't want to take your thunder jumping ahead here, but one of the things that does that did actually confuse me is to see that level of support for the casino resort. Again, let's stipulate that, however defined. But then only that 47% versus 37% yay to nay for the apps. And I don't know.
The online betting stuff.
Exactly. I mean, stuff, there's, yeah. I mean, you know, Chairman Leach said this as much on the floor last session when it went through. But he said, look, people are already doing this anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Which I completely agree. It's completely true. My question is, even with the casino resorts, how do you explain the delta between those particular observations?
Something more for something for everybody is I think a lot of people, I think there definitely was sort of the common wisdom that through fantasy football and through, you know, FanDuel and some of these other apps, you're getting more people used to sports betting or just betting in general, and that it doesn't take away your college kid savings to bet a few, you know, bucks on the Cowboys. Definitely bet against the Cowboys more than not. But the reality, at least from this poll, is what it would suggest. And again, I haven't seen a lot of polling on this, so I don't know if this is an outlier. But it would suggest that if people see that they're getting more than just gambling, that they're getting the fine dining and they're getting the resort pools and they're getting the vacation spots and those kinds of things, that if there's some casino, and again, they don't pitch it as, you know, a bunch of guys at a convenience station pulling a Johnny One Arm. These are sophisticated table games. You know, these are respectable table games that they're selling. And they feel like if they're pitching, or people might feel like, I don't know, I haven't done a full study on this, but that if they're getting more than just simply the casinos and the gambling, that might be an okay thing.
Well, they all think they're going to get, you know, the Dallas Cosmopolitan, but what it's really going to be is it's going to be,
you know, Bill's poker hut, San Antonio.
And that's what opponents will have to show, is you'll have to go into places like Lake Charles, or, you know, not everything looks like Vegas. I mean, look at Atlantic City. I mean, Atlantic City is terrible. Like, it's an awful, awful place now. But not everything looks like, you know, the win. You know, go to places like Lake Charles and look at, you know, they've got these huge casinos, and yet they still have rubble from the 2020 hurricane that are still going on there. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. It seems like a sea change, at least, or maybe some of the marketing is working on that respect, but we'll see what happens. I mean, as everybody's said forever, that the, you know, legalized gaming is probably dead in the Senate as long as Dan Patrick's there. All right, next segment, rapid fire. I will pitch to this is Lies, Damn Lies, and Statistics, where we talk about some research that's going on. So I'll pitch to Derek for that one.
Well, I have to say the biggest statistic that jumped out at me, and I don't know if y'all saw this on the internet yesterday. I think it was originally circulated by Bill Malugan. Did I pronounce that correct? Bill Malugan? I don't know. I only see it online.
That pretty boy on Fox that does immigration.
Exactly. But he pointed out that Texas has received, or I'm sorry, that there has been over 10,000 illegals under this CHNV, Cuba, Honduras, Nicaragua, Venezuela program, that not are coming across the southern border and being paroled, but are being flown into the state of Texas and other states in the United States. And the reason that jumps out is we obviously understand, and we've talked to Celine and Ammon and Melissa and all the folks that do our border and immigration work, and we understand that the state of play and the policy of, you know, a transnational policy question like that, it's hard. It's something that you know, there's a lot of landmines there with the Flores decision and a million other things that you have to deal with. But to have a self-inflicted wound like this, where we're actually just going and getting them and flying them into the United States, when immigration, particularly illegal immigration, is at such a fever pitch right now, I just don't understand the political salience of it.
Perhaps it's just same thing that has to do with why we're capitulating to Mexico right now. I mean, this may be part of some kind of, not to be conspiratorial, but some kind of, you know, deal cut in a back room somewhere where they're, you know, this is just part of the program to get as many illegals into the country as possible.
Well, I know you're talking about deals cut in back rooms, and again, I don't want to make this a soapbox soliloquy here, but you look at basically the Obama approach to foreign policy, specifically in the Middle East, you know, appeasement of Iran, you know, the ascension of, you know, non-major ally status of Qatar, things like that. Well, right now on college campuses, and we'll be having conversations about this soon enough, is I think we're starting to see the whirlwind of this, because people like Tommy Vietor and Ben Rhodes, who think they were geniuses, have basically set the entire house on fire.
Maybe if we point out the carbon footprint that this creates in flying all of these illegals into America, maybe then we can create some, you know, division on the left on that this is not.
They'll have to go fly over to Davos and talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So, all right. And then the last segment we have, the last rapid fire segment, as we get ready for the next couple of weeks, to put something on everybody's plate. What are we watching? Derek, what are you looking at? What's coming up in the next couple of weeks that people need to be aware of?
Well, obviously, the primary runoffs are going to be towards the end of May. That's going to determine a lot of what, you know, with our districts becoming, you know, less and less competitive. We're going to see a lot of, basically, we'll know what the battle lines are in the legislature going forward. And not only that, but I'm looking forward to seeing, specifically in the House, you know, them coming out with their interim charges. Now, just given, I think everyone's to be forgiven on the House side, that it's kind of as many sessions as we've had in the 88th, and, you know, the kind of grueling primaries that we have, I think we're going to have fairly threadbare interim charges that might be just monitoring as opposed to exploratory. But I'm looking forward to seeing what specific issues, even if it's just monitoring, that the House identifies as things that they want to.
Guys, from your from your point of view, is there anything under the radar, anything that you guys are have interim charges or otherwise? Radar, very, very low tech technology. There being, but anything on the horizon that you want to flag
I'll flag
audience?
Two things really quickly. One, Water, Ag, and Rural Affairs in the Senate will be having a hearing on May 15. They're going to focus.
We should have clarified that falls under y'all as well.
That is correct, but it's even more. So it's
and we'll explain it all on the next Rebel Tech.
You got so much content to go, but it's cybersecurity for critical water infrastructure. There was a big attack in Muleshoe in January, by a Russian operative. So how can Texas secure its critical infrastructure? So that's May 15. And then really exciting, so House Bill 18, we talked about that, the Securing Children Online Through Parental Empowerment. There is a joint committee. The House has assembled its committee. Representative Jared Patterson is going to chair that. And it's really to study what are additional things we can look at to keep kids safe online. And so those hearings will begin in the coming weeks. That one kind of flew under the radar with all that was happening in the Senate and then AI and emerging tech. Anything else?
Yeah. So the last two things I would add in are earlier this year, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on the Florida and the Texas content viewpoint discrimination laws.
HB 20. Correct?
HB 20. And on a separate podcast, we had Senator Hughes in to give a rundown on that. Typically, the major or the controversial opinions come out near the end of the term, the first week of June. So we'll be looking for that opinion, and then to hopefully end us on a light note this weekend, I will be watching the Miami Grand Prix and cheering for my doppelganger Valtteri Bottas, or as my today when I was trying to text about it, my voice assistant changed it to Valkyrie Botox. So, anyways,
we let these guys run our tech policy.
So Siri. Those are the two things that I'm looking forward to.
We're going to fix AI, but yeah. Siri is a mystery.
We're really just regulating for our own personal uses. Yeah. That's all.
Yes.
Yeah. Got to keep those robots from stealing your medicine, right?
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. We really appreciate y'all being on the show, Derek. As always, it's been a fantastic show. And for our audience, again, we really love your feedback. Derek and I are both on social media, so you can hate on us there or give us ideas for new shows or guests if you have any cool ideas there. So really appreciate you listening. Really appreciate you watching. And we'll see you next time. As always, do good and risk the consequences. We'll see you next time.